We're going to move on now to the next tour, which is... I've got this written down. It's 1966. Is that right? 1966 to 69?
If that's what you've got,
that's what I've got written down here.
I'll accept that. I can't remember the exact date.
Okay.
I had something like 4 years back in England by that time. Yes,
that's about right. Because I think the first bit was 1958 to 1962, and then we've got 1990. Yeah, so we're talking about the Comsen, which actually. I think you need to explain what that is, because people will be listening to this tape and won't understand Comsen.
Before we get on to the Comsen, the reason why I went out there the second time was to build a jetty on the east side of the rock. Unfortunately, at some stage in the back history of Gibraltar, ammunition ships docked at the detached mole, and then by barge brought the thing into the dockyard, and there they were transported by lorry through the town to the ammunition depots, which are underneath the underground. Unfortunately, one stage they had an explosion, which I think did quite a bit of damage, and the thought was then that they should avoid this transporting of ammunition through the town by taking it from the ammunition ship on the detached mole by lighter round the point of the rock and docking on the east side and taking the thing up, or the ammunition up by a tunnel to the ammunition tunnels above there. So the idea was to build a jetty on the east side of the rock, but basically I don't think it's ever been used. I think it was too dangerous for the lighters to go round the point with the tides and things like that. So fortunately they haven't had another explosion and the thing works perfectly well, but there was a jetty which I built there which was no use at all.
And presumably you had to do quite a lot of diving work for a jetty.
The design of the jetty was with steel piles anchored into the rock, and the rock was fairly close to the seabed there, and the depth of the water wasn't good without the rock, so we had to again drill and blast the rock to place the piles in the holes that we'd drilled and blasted. So it was quite a lot of work for divers there. And again, because I was a diver, I used to go diving there every now and again.
So diving there, a bit different to Chatham, beautiful water at least.
You could see well in the water there. It was nice and clear. Unfortunately, when the easterly wind blows and the Levanter is blowing, you've got bad waves there. And one day we had a very bad blow whilst we were still constructing the depot, the jetty, and quite a lot of the piles that were before they were driven got washed overside, and we had to evacuate the whole thing for a while whilst the storm blew out. And after that we had to go down. Luckily the jetty work that we'd done was untouched. It wasn't affected by the storm, but we had quite a lot of the materials were down on the seabed, so we had to grab them and bring them up and start all over again. But fortunately, as I say, the jetty wasn't affected.
So how many of you were working underwater? How many of you were there?
Well, we'd have about half a dozen divers permanently, with one British man in charge of the diving, and I, as the engineer, used to dive occasionally when it was necessary. But it was a good thing to dive, because I got a half a day's pay extra every time I dive, so I didn't mind diving.
And how long? I mean, not obviously. Well, you and also the people who were actually working on the construction. How long could they stay down?
All morning.
As long as that.
And come up. Yes, they would be down. Well, it depends on the drilling, how the drilling went, and then when we're going to actually do the blowing, the explosives off the drills. So they would come up when the explosive thing and go right back out of the way whilst they blew the thing underwater. But normally they would drill and blast for a whole morning and then probably rest in the afternoon and other divers to go down in the afternoon.
Yes, so they didn't stay down too long.
No.
I mean, diving must have been a bit of a... Was it regarded as a slightly elite sort of job to do?
They were better paid.
Were they quite cool? You know, were divers sort of jack the lads a bit?
Not really, no. They were ordinary workmen that had qualified for diving and been done on a diving course. And the Admiralty in all dockyards had civilian divers.
Actually, I wanted to talk to you as one of my notes here, because obviously Gibraltar's quite famous for diving, and one of the people who did work during the war was, you know, Buster. It was called Buster Crabbe. You know about Buster
Crabbe?
Yes. Was he a bit of a legend when you were there?
Not really, because as far as I know, Buster Crabbe wasn't a helmet diver. In order to work underwater, you've got more or less to be a helmet diver, not a scuba diver type. And as far as I know, Buster Crabbe was a scuba diver type. So in order to work, you had the helmet.
Like one of those huge diving
helmets.
Yes,
big helmet.
Yes.
And big boots and things like that to hold you down, and big weights on you to keep you down.
Yes, of course, actually. Yes, of course, that's what you'd be doing. And he was swimming and taking off
a scuba diver, as far as I know.
Inspecting the boats for mines, which... But, I mean, I think he
they would be like the people from Algeciras that came during when the troop ship was in the bay, dropping charges and things. They wouldn't be helmet divers. They would be scuba divers.
That's right, yeah, so that's what would have been. In fact, I found out that, I think Buster Crabbe eventually went to Venice to clear the canals of mines, and he never came up.
That's surprising, because I was in Venice at the end of the war, and the canals and Venice had been declared an open city, so it was no troops, no Nazi troops, no German troops, no British troops, anything in Venice except for leave. They went there for leave, but there was no fighting in Venice, and I don't think Venice was ever mined.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Well, to be pursued by somebody who's investigating Buster Crabbe, I think.
I would be very surprised if there were any mines in Venice.
Oh, indeed. I've only read it from one source, that, so, you know, maybe one has to corroborate one's information. Very interesting. So that was the jetty, but the other thing we're talking about now is the communication.
The COMSEM. During the war, all of the naval commander on Gibraltar was also the NATO commander for the Eastern Atlantic, I think, and was also, after the war, the commander there. So he had two roles. He was in charge of the dockyard and the Admiralty facilities, but he was also a NATO commander. And he used to do it from the office in the dockyard. And later on, they thought it would be better to have an underground or depot for the COMSEM so that he could operate for his NATO services underground. At that stage, there was already a tunnel from the dockyard through to the east side. So, and off that tunnel was a smaller chamber, which was used by the Gibraltarians for their main telephone base. So it was decided that near that base we would do another chamber to take all the people that were necessary to man the NATO headquarters. And that was the Comsen. And that began channeling quite a good big chamber, two or three chambers actually there, to take all the... it wasn't the main radio equipment. The radio equipment was already at North Front by the 600-foot mast that was there. That was underground there as well, and we also did some tunnelling there. But the Comsem tunnelling was fairly straightforward. We took most of the rock from there into the infill of the jetty on the east side.
Oh, so that was good. So you had the material
from there into the jetty. And the one problem with the Comsen, we had no much trouble with it at all, but at one stage we hit an underground lake. And it was decided to change the design of the Comsen so that we didn't interfere with the underground lake, and which was fresh water. Whether it was ever being used for anything or not, I don't know. I doubt it. But it was a hazard to the tunnelling.
Was it? I mean, had nobody ever found this lake before? You were the first ones?
Yes.
And when you were talking earlier about this rock being limestone, I mean, were the caves, were there some very beautiful caves underneath the rock?
There were there were caves, and I can't remember the name of them, but Gibraltar has an underground cave which has got a platform in and for an audience to have shows there.
Really?
In one part of the rock. Halfway up the rock, that one is. I've been there quite a lot. And there's another set of tunnels all that are there naturally, that have not been blown by us or the engineers, which are down below those as well, which are closed off to the public. But the other one, I can't remember the name of it now, but someone else that knows Gibraltar well will remember the name of the, because they're still there and they're still used for shows.
And are they those beautiful caves, you know, with stalactites?
No, not much.
They're not like the ones at Cheddar in
not
England?
Not really, no.
Oh, I wondered about that. Anyway, I'll have to have a look when I go. But so this Comsen, this again was another enormous project, which you designed.
It wasn't all that big.
Not as big as, obviously not
nothing
as big
like before. Size of that. Mm. No, nothing like.
But did you design it?
Yes.
And how long did that take to build?
The actual tunnelling took about a year. And then it was lined with concrete blocks, and there was a roof put on to stop the dripping of any surface water and things coming through. And as I say, it had its entrance off the east-west tunnel in Gibraltar.
I mean, for an outsider like myself, it is interesting to think that NATO, being quite still a very young organisation, had two of these huge things in this small little place of Gibraltar, two underground, you know. I can't stop thinking about sort of...
Well, it was the British part of NATO that decided that this was necessary. So it was really the British that did do the decision, and NATO accepted it as part of their finance.
And who was NATO financed by? Where did the money come from?
You and I.
So it was financed by taxes from all the different countries who were involved, not just the British, presumably.
More or less. NATO had a construction programme on, which was obviously financed by the various countries.
I just keep making this connection, and this is because I'm an outsider, of thinking that at that time in the 60s, it was exactly when all the James Bond, all the sort of famous Bond films were being made, and they were all about underground things, and they were all, you know, they must have based something on this Gibraltar thing. It sounds terribly, when the rock opens and planes fly out and the megalomaniacs living there and it's all blown up, you know, it's always something like that, isn't it?
I doubt if they knew about it, quite honestly. I don't think it was well known. It was kept very quiet.
But presumably, I mean, as you said, the Spanish were coming in every day. I mean, there's too many people involved. They didn't have to sign the Official Secrets Act, or did they?
I don't know.
I wonder. I think it's a very interesting area.
I think probably they were vetted by security people before they were engaged. But that was about all. So they were open to discussion about what they were doing.
But everything I've heard about Gibraltar as well is because it's such a small place with such a high concentration of people and everybody knows everybody else. I mean, you would imagine that people were saying, well, what are they doing? You know, what are they doing in there? They knew you were making something, but they didn't know what it was, perhaps.
They must have known from the fact that the pipelines were going through part of the town to the jetty. And they must have known that it was for oil fuel. They wouldn't have known the actual design or the quantities or anything like that, but they must have known that the word King's Lines meant it was an oil fuel depot.
But you yourself weren't aware of any espionage, you weren't?
No.
I suppose the thing is that, you know, these projects which you spent a lot of time on and you were the designer, you couldn't have a grand opening of them, really, could you?
It wasn't, it just opened. There was no fuss about people coming. We had the First Lord of the Admiralty visited Gibraltar while I was there. And obviously, because it was one of the projects which was his, he came to see it. But there was no discussion and no publicity about his visit at all.
And how did you feel when it was finished?
Well, I went to work in the dockyard then for a short while before coming home to work on another project that was quite separate from Gibraltar. And later on, when I went back to Gibraltar again for the second time, when I did the ComSem and the jetty on the east side, I also built the desalination works that were on the east side. And that was another NATO project.
So there's an enormous amount of building work in Gibraltar that's down to you. A huge amount.
Well, I spent 7 years there.